This week in Retronauts, name a number between 1 and 2. Welcome, good morning, good evening. It's Retronauts time. This is episode 435, I think. And we're here today to talk about video games. Old video games, but, you know, good video games. I'm your host this week, Living JoJo's Bizarre Adventure reference, Diamond Fight. And with me today, we have two knowledgeable people. Let's start with the one who directly employs me.
I guess that's me. Hi, I'm Jeremy Parrish, and I'm looking for the Shadow Loose so I can have a potty break.
And over in the state of California?
Oh, yeah, that's me. I'm Brandon Sheffield. I live in the state of California always. I've never lived anywhere else. Probably never will.
Wow. Who knows? Amazing. I haven't been to California recently. Seems like a nice place, though.
Yeah, one of the things we got is the same weather all the time. Big fan of that. No snow. No, what's that other stuff you got?
Rain? Yeah.
Rain. We don't have that.
Hail?
We got some recently. We got some rain and hail recently, though. Last month, we had a bunch of it. Enough to keep us alive for another year, probably.
Oh, so, that's always good.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, I'm glad we got the climate talk out of the way.
Oh, wait. Should I say who I am?
Why don't you say a little bit? Because it's been a spell since you've been here on Retronauts.
Yeah. So, I'm Brandon Sheffield. I'm the creative director of Necrosoft Games. We make little video games that you can enjoy. We got a game called Hyper Gunsport coming out soon. And I also, relevant to this, have worked on a bunch of Digital Eclipse collections, including the Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection. So that is my relevant experience to this episode.
Yes, well, Brandon, you said the magic words. This is another part of our Street Fighter series. To catch everyone up, 361 was an episode about Street Fighter 1 and Street Fighter 2010, because why not? 367 was all about Street Fighter 2, the original game. 377 was a side quest into Final Fight. 386 was back to Street Fighter 2 about the various versions of it. And then just last month, about this recording, 423 was about the Street Fighter II media umbrella, which is very relevant to this conversation, because today we are talking about Street Fighter Alpha, which is a direct descendant of some of that associated media. But before we go into what this episode is about, Brandon, this is your first appearance on a Street Fighter episode of Retronauts, so please tell people what happened when you met Street Fighter. When was that? What was that like for you?
So I encountered Street Fighter first in the 90s, as many people that were alive at that time did. Mm.
Difficult not to, really.
Yeah, it's true. Early 90s, playing like... It was either... I can't remember if it was playing Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo at my friend's house, or playing Street Fighter 2 at the 7-Eleven in an arcade machine around the corner from that same person's house. But it was one of those two.
You know the zip code.
Yes, exactly. It was in El Cerrito, California that I did this. And it was pretty obtuse to me. I didn't know what was going on. I was trying to figure it out, and I couldn't because I neither owned a Super Nintendo nor had an arcade machine close to me. So I couldn't just like go and figure it out, which is kind of why Street Fighter Alpha is important, because the first Street Fighter game I owned was Fighting Street on the TurboGrafx CD.
So sorry.
Well, I loved the music. Like, I didn't enjoy playing it, but the music was so cool that I was, that placated me, but I was like, this series can't be that good if this is what they got. And incidentally, I at some point got the still unpublished history of the porting of Street Fighter as Fighting Street to the TurboGrafx CD. I should publish that at some point. I got that from the person who did it, straight from the horse's mouth. But anyway, later on, I wound up getting Street Fighter Alpha on PlayStation, and I thought it was okay. But then when Street Fighter Alpha 2 Gold came out on the Sega Saturn in the Street Fighter collection that they had, that was when I was like, okay, I'm actually really into this. Like, I had already sort of gotten into and sort of understood King of Fighters before that, based on my limited rudimentary knowledge of Street Fighter. But once Alpha 2 Gold came out, I was like, oh man, I should play this game. I played that a lot. So for me, the Alpha series was really my entry point into the world of Street Fighter in a serious way. Not that I ever became a serious player, but in terms of like being super into Street Fighter, that it was the Alpha series that made that happen for me.
Well, I would say that was perhaps by design. We'll get into the origin story of the series, but yeah, Street Fighter Alpha, or as known in Japan, Street Fighter Zero, was basically derived from the 1994 anime, which came out. It's funny, 94, we had the Hollywood movie and we had the Japanese anime, and I think everyone at this point agrees that the anime is a lot better. I don't know. By all means, did you two see the animated film?
Yeah, I mean, better is one way to say it. It's like they're very different because
yes,
the actual live action movie is ridiculous and stupid, and so like I can't take either one completely seriously. And as something that's stupid, I think Street Fighter the movie is stupider, and so I can enjoy it more as a piece of filth than I can the anime, if that makes
sense.
Yeah,
the live-action movie is very campy. And, you know, some of the actors were kind of in on that and understood what they were doing, especially Raul Julia. Like, he really he really sells that movie. Like, he understands that it's just ridiculous. And
For me, it was Tuesday.
He plays that up. Whereas the anime is much more, like, quintessentially early 90s action anime. With all that entails, you know, lots of violence, lots of blood, the obligatory Chun-Li shower scene where she's on display fully for everyone to enjoy, and then has a fight in her underwear against Vega, or Balrog, if you prefer. It's a great fight, yes. But I mean, it definitely, you know,
it's of the era.
It's definitely going for, yeah, kind of the lowest common denominator in a lot of ways. Although, you know, generally the animation quality is pretty great. There's some really great, you know, as you said, fight staging. And of course, there's the iconic, you know, fight that we'll talk about in the course of this episode, because it's so essential to what Street Fighter Alpha is and the
inspiration. It's dramatic, you might say.
It is. It's very dramatic. A dramatic fight, really. Dramatic battle.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're two different pieces of work, and I can definitely understand why Capcom in Japan would be like, let's use the cartoon as a basis for what we're doing with this, as opposed to the live action movie.
Yeah, it makes sense, and I guess it was also with new hire Naoto Kuroshima's art, who did an illustration for some magazine, and then one of the higher ups was like, okay, well, if this art is so cool, because I think it was, who was it that kept talking about it? One of the principals of Street Fighter Alpha kept talking about how cool it was. And then a higher up was like, all right, if it's that cool, let's make a game about it. And then the guy was like, oh no, I have to do this. but it makes a lot of sense, because the Alpha series has fewer colors and more simplistic style. But it just has this crystalline purity to it that makes it, you know, you get that sense that they were looking at cell keyframes and stuff like that when they were making this. It really has a lot of character while having less shading and being almost flatter. But it brings a lot of character for it. I love it. Alpha series. Are we talking about the whole Alpha series, by the way, or just Alpha 1?
Well, the focus, I think, today will be Alpha 1, but we could certainly talk about its legacy and its sequels as well.
Yeah, I don't honestly have a whole lot to say about Alpha 1. It just kind of slid right past me. And, you know, we can talk about this too, but it was just kind of hard to notice it, I think, because there was so much Street Fighter out there at the time. And this just seemed like, to me, you know, kind of in passing, just another one. It was Street Fighter Alpha 2. And weirdly enough, the Super NES port, which was shockingly good. The very tail end of the Super NES era. One of my
certainly
roommates,
trying its best.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It tried so hard. They did so much with that. They gave it load times. That takes real talent. One of my roommates bought it because we had really enjoyed, you know, playing Super Street Fighter 2 together. And then I kind of dropped off, but he bought it and we were just like, this is mind-blowingly good. Who are all these new characters who are so cool? What's up with this really cool artwork? It's great. So that was kind of where I came in. And Street Fighter Alpha is one that I've never really spent that much time with because it just feels like, you know, since I jumped straight to Street Fighter Alpha 2, what is there that Alpha has to offer that Street Fighter Alpha 2 doesn't? And I hope this episode answers that and gives me reason to go and visit Street Fighter Alpha.
It may well.
Well, let's begin at the beginning, like Street Fighter Zero. So the idea behind the name was that, at least to the producers, they thought Street Fighter Zero encapsulated the meaning of origin. Another working title for this game was Street Fighter Classic, which they were actively abbreviating as SFC, which they thought is funny because it was also, you know, Super Famicom.
Mm-hmm.
We have a quote here. Yeah, a lot of the quotes from this in this show are going to come from two different interviews. I found a 1995 translated interview with Noritaka Funamizu, who's the producer of Alpha, Seiji Okada, who was a programmer from Street Fighter 2 days, and who also worked on Alpha, and Haruo Murata, who says he was in charge of planning and writing all of Street Fighter 2, Turbo, and Alpha. And there's also some bits in here from a 2020 oral history, which was done by Matt Leone on Polygon. I think we've recommended that multiple times in the show by now, but by all means, check out that series. It's just so much firsthand information about the making of these games, which is fantastic.
Can I talk about those two sources for a second? Because I think there's something interesting there, which is it's always really interesting to look at interviews from the time.
Mm.
And the 1995 one is before release, I believe,
yes,
of Street Fighter Alpha, and then looking at what came after.
Mm-hmm.
and seeing what is the truth that they're allowed to tell in 1995 versus the truth that they're allowed to tell 25 years later. And one particularly interesting thing that I noted that was different between the two is in 1995, they're like, you know, we were experimenting with making a game in 10 months. And then you come to find out 25 years later, they were given 3 months, but they actually did it in 6.
And if you add those together, 3 and 6 is almost 10.
That's right. But they were, you get the sense in 1995, they didn't want to tell people they made this, that they were trying to make this game in 3 months, because people would be like, this is another cash grab. You're just trying to like shift another one of these out here and get rid of all these boards. But and to me, it's remarkable that it, in that time, it came together as well as it did. Okay, I just wanted to, like, I love reading an old interview from the time and then a new interview and just seeing, like, the truth spew out in between the intervening years.
Yes, I'm grateful that the more recent chat sort of lays bare a lot of just frank stuff. Like, yeah, this, you know, partly this was business. It's like we had all these parts and we had to use these parts.
And that was really common. Like I talked about the last episode that I was here, actually, with Samurai Showdown. They had all these extra MVS carts, Neo Geo MVS carts, that they needed to put stuff on because they had overly fulfilled. They had too many unfulfilled orders for Samurai Showdown 5 Special. And so they had to make one more version of it. And sometimes you just get a warehouse full of inventory and you got to put it somewhere. I guess that actually happened with the Super Nintendo game too, right?
In the sense of stuff being crammed into a warehouse?
Yeah, so in the oral history, the Super Nintendo version of Alpha 2 did not sell that
well.
So they had like all these overstock copies and they had to gray market send them out to South America and stuff.
Yep, that was one of the kind of things that really created a fracture between Nintendo and Capcom in that era, and why you didn't see a whole lot of Capcom stuff on N64. I think they didn't publish until like 2000, and it was like Mickey's Magical Tetris and a port of Mega Man Legends, and that was pretty much all they did on N64. And a big part of that is because
Resident Evil 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. The super compressed version. They lost a ton of money in the late Super NES era because Nintendo required them to pay up front for manufacturing and you know, all that stuff. And when their games didn't sell, Nintendo was like, I don't know, you paid your license and we manufactured stuff. It's on you guys. So that happened with a few developers and publishers in that era and created a lot of ill will. And then Sony, of course, came along and they were like, we'll just give you money for free. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you look at the contrast, you know, by that point, 96, 97, you know, they've got lots of PlayStation games out there. You know, Resident Evil is already a huge hit, and they're just printing out discs. Meanwhile, to get, you know, to fit Street Fighter Alpha 2 onto a cartridge, they had to invest all this money, and then it didn't sell well, because, again, by the time Alpha 2 hits the Super Nintendo, you know, the N64 is already out, so it's kind of a smaller market. They don't sell as well. They have less extra inventory. You look at those two directions, which, well, I guess let's make more discs, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, the Street Fighter Alpha 2 cartridge is one of the few games on Super NES that uses the SA2 chip, which is kind of the most complex chip.
I thought it was the SDD1.
Is it? I thought it was SA2. Okay, in any case, it's one of the absolute most complex chips and therefore most expensive chips. And you know, Nintendo gave themselves all the cool chips they wanted for free because they made them, but then, you know, those carts were extra expensive for everyone else. So it was just bad times all around. But I do really like that port. It's really, really impressive that they managed to cram that much into a 16-bit machine.
Yeah, they really tried. Also, speaking of which, have you seen that there is an initiative right now to port the game to Sega Genesis?
I had not seen that, but you know, someone is porting Symphony of the Night to Genesis, so at this point, all bets are off.
Yeah, and it's actually looking pretty good. Like, the characters are pretty large, the move sets are starting to be there. It's impressive to see. It's all thanks to SGDK.
I saw a video of Tomb Raider running on GBA over the weekend, so like,
oh yeah,
nothing surprises me anymore. Oh, you're right, it's the SDD1 chip. I blew it. I thought I was a cool guy, and I'm not.
It's all right. We knew it was a chip. We just didn't know what the combination
was. It had an S in it. That's important. Yes, and a 1. An S.
And hey, I got to know something about Nintendo, so that makes me pretty happy.
Oh, well done.
Omerito. So, we're talking about Alpha/Zero. So, yeah, so what about that? What about that name? Well, we have a quote here from the public relations associate at Capcom USA, Chris Kramer. And as he put it, Capcom US had a long history of trying to rename every game that came out. And so when they heard the name Street Fighter Zero, they're like, well, okay, that's not going to work. You know, as he put it, that sounds negative. And so since they heard, you know, New Beginning, they heard Prequel, they proposed Alpha as an alternate, which is funny because a few years later, Capcom did indeed make Resident Evil Zero, which is that title in all locations. And of course, these days, you know, Yakuza Zero was a big hit. A couple years ago, there was a rather forgettable Dracula movie that was called Dracula Untold in the U.S. Here in Japan, it was called Dracula Zero. So they're still here zeroing it up in Japan.
There's the whole Mega Man Zero thing, although I guess that kind of gets a buy because the character is named Zero. But still, I would argue, though, that Zero is not a negative name. It is, in fact, not negative by its very nature. It's neither positive nor negative.
True. It's technically not negative.
Damn it, Chris Kramer.
But I do think that in 1995... if you said Street Fighter Zero, all the game magazines would have made fun of it. Like,
When did Coke Zero come out? I want to say it was before that. So I think I feel like that idea of like, I don't know, maybe that was why. Maybe they were like, oh, this is, you know, Street Fighter without the calories. This is like the diet version of Street Fighter. It's less than the real thing. So that I could actually see that. I could see that.
Yeah.
It does bug me, though, that the idea that they stuck with the Zero name in Japan, because as the people behind the game explain, it's not before Street Fighter 1. It's between Street Fighter 1 and 2, hence my little joke at the beginning. As Murata put it, you know, he thinks of it, this game takes place several months or so after Street Fighter 1. They wanted the audience to imagine this as being something that follows 1 but precedes 2. But they gamed it 0. So
it's where the players, so in Street Fighter 1 they have a lot to learn before they beat him.
Right.
And through the Alpha series they learn a lot. That's what that's how it goes. That's my Street Fighter 1 joke.
Street Fighter learning, yeah.
I have to correct myself here, because if we don't, okay, someone's going to. Apparently, just history is blurring together for me, and Coke Zero was not introduced until 2005.
So, oh man, yeah.
Wow.
Okay, crazy. That's still older than I thought it was.
Maybe you're thinking of Clear Pepsi or Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah, Pepsi. Crystal Pepsi was the late 80s, early 90s. I want to say there was like Pepsi Max that ended up being renamed Pepsi Zero. And I remember
Pepsi
seeing
Pepsi One. And I remember Tom Green used to hawk Pepsi One when his show was big. So that would have been like 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
But I don't think Pepsi One exists anymore.
Anyway, it really doesn't matter. I just wanted to throw it out there so people aren't like, God, Jeremy, what a moron. I mean, people are going to still say that, but at least it won't clutter up the comments.
It's all right. We're all here. We're all having a safe conversation. And as part of this earlier conversation, we talked about those extra boards. Yes, there was in fact a very economical reason to make another Street Fighter game, and that's according to planner Hideaki Itsuno, they had a lot of extra CPS 1 boards laying around. They were trying to get rid of those boards, and then they realized they also had CPS 2 boards left over. So they had this mountain of extra arcade boards sitting around, you know, probably some factory in the outskirts of Osaka, and they had to get rid of it. So part of the motivation to make this game was, what are we going to do with all these boards that we got? So the Alpha project sort of began as a sort of, you know, let's put this stuff to good use. Let's use this, because at that point, you know, this is late 94, early 95. Darkstalkers is already out. Vampire Hunter is either out or coming out very, very soon. Those are very advanced, in my opinion, gorgeous games that deserve their own episode of Retronauts. I'll make a note to myself on that. But Alpha's not beautiful. Alpha is just sort of efficient. It's there. You know, Brandon, you said that it has fewer colors. I'm sure it has. It definitely does not have the amount of animation that, you know, a Darkstalkers game does. But it certainly, it pops, you know, it's the designs, and it's, I think it's very eye-catching, even though it's not as gorgeous, you know?
No, it's stylish, I would say. Mm-hmm. It has its own, I mean, the style really developed over time, especially by the time you got to Alpha 3, and you had like intro graphics sliding in different directions and stuff, and it looked really cool, but it was along the path to that where it was going for drama and flair over detail, and I think that worked really well for it.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of really good things have come out of, you know, arcade manufacturers saying, oh my God, we've got all these expensive boards. What are we going to do with them? You know, all these expensive components. Obviously, that's where Donkey Kong came from. And, you know, even Punch-Out. They were like, oh, we've got all these dual monitor, or all these extra screens. Let's make a dual screen game. But the thing that really appeals to me about Alpha Style is that it seems like it's really directly going for a cell animation style, which is something you really didn't see done that much at this period. Because, you know, video games, when they were 2D, desperately wanted to be 3D, and they would accomplish that by adding more shading and adding more dimensionality and depth and, you know, basically mass, you know, volume to their characters through kind of the visual illusion of having shading and lighting and everything. And, you know, Street Fighter was definitely a big step in that road. Like the graphics when that game first came out, I mean, you look at it now and you're like, oh yeah, that looks cartoonish. But at the time, like to me, it seemed like they were really pushing more towards some sort of visual realism, even if the character faces didn't look, you know, like human faces, they were cartoon faces. You still had that kind of visual depth. You had that with the backgrounds and the, you know, the multiple layers of parallax scrolling and kind of the illusionary foregrounds on the floor that would shift and change perspective as you moved around. Like, they were really going for that sense of space and mass and volume. And that was what everyone wanted. You know, games were really, really pushing hard to get to 3D. And in 1995, you know, that's the year that Saturn launches in America, and everyone says, poop, that's all 2D graphics, except Panzer Dragoon, and we like that. And PlayStation launches, and it's got Ridge Racer and all these other games that are 3D, and they look so cool and so immersive and impressive. And then you have Capcom saying, here is Street Fighter Alpha, which takes away all the depth and dimensionality to create much more of a pure cartoon style with, like, flat colors and maybe a single shade of you know, of shadow for shading. And it really, you know, black outlines on characters. Obviously, they had done some of that with Darkstalkers as well. But this was, I feel like it was a really kind of a bold step to take a game that already had precedent with that sort of fool the eye 3D element to its shading and coloring, and to say, no, actually, now it is a cartoon. It's flat. It looks like a cell. And there's much less of the kind of immersion that you had in the previous games with this one. And, you know, I can see where that was probably a hard sell at the time, but it looked really interesting because you didn't see a lot of games doing that. And the characters all had much more dynamic and, I feel like, energetic designs. You know, there was more energy to their stances. They had more exaggerated features, like bigger muscles, spikier hair, like crazy eyebrows, like on Dan. You know, it just, everyone was just, and Ken, yes. Oh my God, Ken's eyebrows. They just won't stop. It's like, I understand, you know, now that I'm in my 40s, I'm like, oh my God, what's happening to my eyebrows? Like, I understand Ken was there years before me, and now I'm sympathetic, but You just have that energy that isn't really possible with more realistic graphics. And then you look, you know, on the other side of the fence, and you have Mortal Kombat, and you have Killer Instinct, and games that were going for either the digitization or the pre-rendered 3D graphics. And yes, they have a lot of depth and they have a lot of detail, but they just seem so static and lifeless by comparison to Alpha, which just it's bursting with energy. Even in this first game, like by the time, as Brandon said, by the time you get to Alpha 3, it's just like, bam, in your face. But even here, there's just this sort of liveliness that was not really present in previous Street Fighter games, and especially in the competition. So it's kind of a bold stance for, you know, approach for Capcom to take. But, you know, I think their pragmatism and kind of like, let's get this game out in as little time as possible and do what it takes to do that, to accomplish that, you know, born of pragmatism, it still was a great creative idea, and really it was a strong choice that really helped the game stand out.
I think also it helps the game to not look particularly dated, mm-hmm. because it's stylized from the start. They were going for a specific look that wasn't going to date itself like Toshinden, which was trying to be as 3D as possible and did a good job for the time. But, you know, it winds up looking cute in a different way than they intended at that time. Like, it was supposed to be cool and modern and edgy. And I feel like Street Fighter Alpha, if you look at it for the first time now, it looks as good as it looked when you looked at it for the first time in 1995. And I think that comes down to the strong character designs and the limited color palette, intentionally so, and the way that the animation is done. It's just all, it's really like they were going for something and they achieved it.
Yeah, I think they also kind of laid down a template for future game developers who wanted to create fighting games on a budget, you know, doujin developers or indie game developers who didn't necessarily have, you know, huge studio backing with which to create a fighting game. But here's kind of the keys to the kingdom, the formula for doing that. And, you know, a decade later, you would see indie games start to take that approach, not just fighting games, but stuff like Cave Story, where it's just like, go super minimal, go, you know, with kind of low impact graphic design that a small team can do in a small amount of time. And again, it was really kind of working backward against the processes of gaming at the time where just studios were expanding. Dev teams were going from, you know, 6 people in the 8-bit era to 60 people in the 32-bit era or even more, and then outsourcing stuff. You know, it just, in some ways, it was a step backward, but also kind of a progressive step forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Alpha rolls it back as much as like a Cave Story or similar, but...
Oh, sure. No.
You can feel the origins of it on multiple vectors. One is, of course, since they had to make it work on the CPS-1, they had to make it... It was necessarily limited because the CPS-2 was a stronger board, so they had to... You know, they had to cut some things out that otherwise they might have done. And the other thing is Itsuno was like an unknown designer who had just entered Capcom and got hired to the project, he says, because he came in every morning and played the Neo Geo that they had set up and played King of Fighters 95. And so Funomizu or whoever, was it Funomizu? Anyway, hired him up and was like, you want to take charge of this Street Fighter Alpha series? And he was like, sure. But he'd only worked on quiz games and stuff before that. So you had like young, new talent, some very direct limitations with the CPS-1 board. And then it's like, what can you do within that that feels new? And Alpha is what they came up with.
Yeah, there's a quote from Itsuno that says, this is going to be a game designed for porting. So even as they were making it, they knew that, you know, it was obviously, it came out in arcades first. We have June 95 for most arcade releases. But by the end of the year in Japan, it was already on PlayStation, and PlayStation and Saturn both in America in 96. And one of the weirder things, I still can't believe this is real. In 1999, you know, after the series has already, you know, had multiple sequels, there's a Game Boy Color port of Street Fighter Alpha, apparently published by Virgin Interactive. And so it came out in Europe in 99, US in 2000, in Japan, 2001.
It's wild.
I cannot imagine seeing a Game Boy Color Street Fighter Alpha on a store shelf in 2001 and saying, yes, this is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, but wasn't that developed by Crawfish, who then went on to develop the really, really impressive port of Street Fighter Alpha 3 for GBA?
Might have been.
It was Crawfish, yes.
Okay, yeah. Like, they squeezed a lot more performance out of those systems for fighting games than they really should have been able to. I remember seeing that when it came out and thinking, wow, that's, you know, one, a huge step backward. It's two games backward. But also, I can't imagine trying to cram that into a Game Boy Color. But by all accounts, you know, people who have played it have said, surprisingly good.
I mean, it's basically there. The game is in there, you know, it doesn't, there's not a lot of,
but yeah, they didn't do a Neo Geo Pocket Color with it and turn everyone into like little chubby characters,
little chibi friends.
Like, yeah, like, you know, the whole Neo Geo Pocket Color approach to fighting games, now that we mentioned, you know, now that comes up, is really kind of the Alpha approach of just like stripping out detail and super stylizing everything to the point where, you know, you just kind of pare it down to the essence. It's taking that approach, you know, a few steps further. But they didn't go with that for the Game Boy Color game, and it's much more of like an attempt to be the arcade game on Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the characters are very, very tiny, but you can, it's very clear which character is which. Certainly they're identifiable, and all the characters are in there. They did not cut anyone out, so I do appreciate that. That is a nice gesture, but. Yeah, it sounds really bad, and I can't imagine. Maybe it's playable. I don't know. I do not have a Game Boy Color on hand.
I've played it. It's okay.
I mean, okay.
It's not great, but it's definitely one of those, like, if you've only got a Game Boy Color, you can play it kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, on the grand spectrum of Game Boy fighting games, it's got to be fairly high up there. Which is, I admit, like, not a great, you know, metric to judge by, you know, not the most impressive metric, but, you know, it's something.
It's a tall person in a shallow pool.
Exactly.
Yes.
I can't relate to that, but yes.
Me neither. So let's talk about the economics of this factor. So yes, as we mentioned before, this game was made on a very short timeline. The initial interview speculated as being 10 months. They said it started in October 94, which would have been about 6 months after Super Street Fighter II Turbo was finished. And as Funimizu put it, in the day, he said, if we only had 10 months, we wanted to challenge ourselves and see just how much we could pack into a game with a 10-month development period. But yeah, Funimizu, 25 years later, said we had a 3-month deadline. So,
yeah,
you know, he says it eventually took 6 months. But yeah, the older version of Funimizu is less flowery with his description of working on this game. And I really think even for me at the time, who knew nothing about development time and costs and such, you could tell when you look at the first game, it's got, you know, corners were clearly cut. The one that always stood out to me is the fact that, you know, you look at Street Fighter 2, you look at basically any game that came out after Street Fighter 2, and one of the sort of mainstays of this of the genre is every character occupies a space. You know, like this is the Ryu stage, this is the Chun-Li stage. You know, if it's Fatal Fury, okay, this is the Big Bear stage, this is the Billy Kane stage. Alpha only really has 5 stages. You know, they add some effects. They sort of make a day-night cycle going on, but basically they made 5 backgrounds. You know, it's like, it's the Simpsons joke again. You have, here are 5 backgrounds. So it's very visible to me, even at the time, that they clearly didn't have a lot to work with, or it was they wanted to get out the door, perhaps. But I don't think it's not necessarily a negative, but it's something that
it's notable
is obvious, I think, when you look at it. Especially, for me, one thing that stands out is depending on who you play as in this game, you have a different final boss. It's all based around what character's journey, you know, who are you fighting against. Like, you know, Sagat is obviously going to fight Ryu, and I think for some of them it's Bison. But if you do fight Bison as the last boss, you're fighting him like in this weird sort of like train graveyard. It's just like it doesn't make any sense for who he is. You know,
he hates trains,
right? I mean, Street Fighter 2, he's you know, he's got his own temple, he's got this giant bell, everything about that stage is sort of like, oh, this is it, you know, you've reached the end of this game. And in Alpha, it's like, oh yeah, I think I fought Birdie here, you know, it's just like...
yeah.
Sort of anticlimactic.
It also felt like a step backward in terms of the character roster. It has, what, like a dozen characters? And I feel like Super Street Fighter 2 had 16?
Alpha has a total of 13 characters.
Oh, okay. 13.
Which is less than Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, but not bad if you consider the fact that, you know, they're all new. Everyone here is a new drawing. You know, like Street Fighter 2, they kept adding more characters and kept the old ones around. But this is like, okay, here's our new game. So they made 13 brand new, like, drawings, which is, you know, which I do appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead. Let's talk about the roster then. We have the roster. So we have a quote here from Funimizu. He said, "We knew we had to keep Ryu, Ken, and Chun-Li. And then we decided the rest from there." And he said, they paid attention to the background of the characters. We didn't want to end up with just Japanese and Asian characters. So they thought about, you know, they put a little thought into diversity. I think that's one reason why Birdie is now black. In the original Street Fighter, he's just a big white guy, but now he's a darker-skinned person. Funimizu also said they looked at Final Fight because Final Fight's working title was Street Fighter 89. They're like, okay, well, that's a Street Fighter then. And they go ahead and they grab Guy and Sodom from Final Fight, put him in. Later games add Rolento and Cody.
Maki.
Hagar never shows up, but...
Yeah, I never knew if Sodom was originally Japanese and changed to be a white guy in Alpha. That was my suspicion, because when I played Street Fighter originally, I was like, oh, they brought a Japanese samurai here into this cage match, and that's what's going on. Like, they flew this guy in to fight this match. And then in Alpha, he's this, like, weeaboo white guy who loves samurai culture and is a big doof. And I was like, I remember seeing this character and being like, wow, these people really hate me. You know, it felt like a character attack against the people in the US that like their games. Or at least the white folks in the US that like their games.
I don't know. I never took that as being like, hey, you like Japanese stuff? You suck. It was more like, hey, you don't have any real common sense about how you express your like of Japanese stuff? You suck. It's, you know, I think there's a difference. And this is, he is definitely a guy who they characterized as like not not knowing when to step back and calm down. And
yeah, I'm just
having encountered lots of people like that in my time.
Totally.
I can appreciate the comedy there.
Yeah, just as a when I was 14 or 15 and encountering this, I was like, hey. Yep.
Well, it does give him some sense of character. As you said, in Final Fight, he's just sort of this weirdo who appears and, you know, he's got a helmet on. You can't see his face either way. And his only thing is like, I've got swords. You've got fists. I've got swords. And in this game, he doesn't have swords anymore. He has I looked it up. It's called jitte, these little sort of stubby sort of defensive weapons, really. But yeah. You know, he still carries two of them. He's still a big guy. He moves around a lot. Pretty strong. I do appreciate the fact that they've added his chest piece. I don't know what armor. I don't know what you call that thing. It's got you know, she, the character for death, on it. But even when you look at it, it looks a little bit off. You know, it looks like he painted it on there himself and he didn't do a good job of it.
Very good.
Which to me is a very personal story because, probably about 20 years ago or so now, I remember I got dressed up for Halloween one year and I decided, oh, let's just be as, I've got all this extra stuff from my trip to Japan. Let's just go as a zombie and I'll put on this Japanese stuff and I'll be like a Japanese zombie. And my big brain idea was, hey, I know some kanji. I'll draw the kanji for death on my forehead. But I did it in the mirror. So,
oh, God.
Sure enough, you know, I went to this party was in New York City. You know, I think the first Asian person I encountered is like, yeah, that's on backwards. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did it myself.
It's good self-own there. That's for sure.
Yes.
Let this be a lesson to all of us about cultural appropriation.
Yeah, stay in your lane. Only do American stuff. You can only eat hamburgers.
Anyway, the other characters, however, we have you and Ken. They're both back. You can tell the alpha design is very much based on how they look in the movie, because Ryu is using a white headband instead of a red headband, which Ken actually gives him in the movie. And Ken has really long blonde hair. And as you said, Jeremy, he's got very big eyebrows. I think they're almost like clipping through his hair. Like, that's how giant they are. And I appreciate the fact that at this point, you know, in Street Fighter 2, Ryu and Ken and later Akuma it's basically one sprite with different heads on it. At this point, they're clearly trying to make the characters drawn a little differently. They're giving mm-hmm. them slightly more and more different moves, different kicks, you know, overheads. Like, they're trying to make the characters' journey apart, really. They take big steps in Alpha that just they couldn't do in Street Fighter 2 because they didn't want to redraw the characters.
Yeah, this is where Ken starts to become my go-to character, because he's got the hurricane kick that's a little stronger and goes in the air. Maybe Ryu could do it in the air too, but and then going straight into that Shoryuken, just being a spammy jerk. The beginning of that flowchart for me starts there in Alpha, and that's where I really started to like Ken.
So he mentioned Chun-Li. Chun-Li had to be there. She is there. However, now she's wearing a tracksuit instead of a dress. She is no less muscular. But
I love that one. The tracksuit is the best outfit.
It's a good look because the top still has the same sort of decoration on it, but the bottom mm-hmm. is just this big solid color, and it shows off. You know, she still has the same moves. She's still good at the kicking. Likewise, speaking of redrawing, so she's now has a unique animation for throwing her fireball, the Kikoken, and it's not just, you know, a recolored Dalsim fireball. It's a unique sprite. She's got sort of this. How do you explain this move? She like sticks her butt up and her hands out. Like, it's a really great sort of dramatic pose to attack with, you know, as opposed to Street Fighter 2, where they just took one of her animations and made a fireball come out of it. Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. she puts her back into it, like literally, like her whole back into it.
Yeah, it's like it's coming from her spine.
Yeah. And I also appreciate in Alpha 1, anyway, her stage is the Great Wall of China, which is just, it's a cool looking place to have a fight, even though not a street, but, you know, we'll accept it.
There's kind of like a road on top of the wall.
Yeah.
You could get a bike on there, for
sure. I've been on there. You could drive a car on there if you got the right kind of car and found a way to get it up there.
All right. I have not been. I'd like to go.
It was pretty good. I drank a beer up there on the top of the Great Wall, and They got people up there, just like old grandmas and grandpas, selling stuff out of little coolers. And there are parts you can go, parts you can't go. And you can also, when you leave, depending on what ticket you purchase and where you go, you can take a bizarre, dangerous, not very well monitored slide all the way back down to the ground, to the ground level. It's wild. And there's a little lever to control your speed. It's super fun. It's
ooh. So, all right. Sounds like
that's what I know about that.
I've got a plan. Get drunk, operate slide.
There you go. That was my plan.
Other returning characters. Sagat is back. He's I would say he's way less beanpole now. He's still a tall guy.
Yeah, he's chunky.
Now he's a lot thicker.
He's good.
And speaking of thick with two C's, Bison, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
He is totally, I mean, he was not slim in the first game. He was definitely a guy who, you know, did not skip arm day, but Jesus Christ. His alpha sprite is something else.
Yeah, in the first game, he, you know, he had a military suit, so you were like, are those legs like thigh muscles or are they jodhpurs? But now, you know, in alpha, it's like those are thigh muscles and also jodhpurs, and he's got thigh muscles on his arms too.
Yeah, he's having a hard time keeping those things contained in the sleeves, that's for sure.
Those boys are going to just burst out all over the place.
Bloom.
Again, clearly taken directly from his look in the anime, which, you know, made him a giant of a man. He also, in Alpha, his Psycho Crusher is now a super move. You can't just zip back and forth across the stage all you want. But he uses his Psycho Power. He can sort of throw these sort of kinetic balls. And he can also teleport now. He's got to teleport. In Japan, it's, you know, in Japan, he's called Vega, so it's Vega Warp. In America, it's called Bison Warp, which I don't think has the same ring to it, but it is a teleport.
And also, he keeps his cape on during combat, right?
Yes.
Whereas in Street Fighter 2, he shows up with a cape, and then he's like, oh, I can't keep this on here. He throws it to the side, and it kind of flickers into non-existence. But here, he's like, nope. I don't care what they said, you know, what they told me in The Incredibles. I'm going to fight this way anyway.
Yeah, and it's probably because they were redrawing it, so they were like, yeah, we could probably do some cape flaps. It's a lot of work, but they went and did it. Mm-hmm. That's why it's only two colors.
Yeah. Who else is back? Oh, it's Akuma, or Goki in Japan. He is back. He's still a secret boss. You can select him on the basic screen if you pull some shenanigans, but otherwise, he's in there. He also has, again, kind of like you and Ken, you're starting to see a little bit of diversion there. He's got some extra moves. I forget the name of them, but I know he's got that move where you sort of like do a quick hop up and you can decide whether you want to come down at a punch or come down at a kick. You know, he's got his warp. He's got the Shingoku Satsu move. He's got all this stuff. And then let's talk about Dan. Shall we talk about Dan, the other guy who's sort of similar? So Dan is, at first glance, kind of a joke character, but he's not really a joke. Let's let Funamizu explain. Funamizu says that good old Akiman made some art for a CD booklet, and he drew Sagat holding this guy by the head, just completely owning this guy who's got he's got a little ponytail, and he's got a fighting gi on. And the staff looked at them and was like, hey, that looks a lot like the characters from Art of Fighting. Which, you know, Art of Fighting was 92 on Neo Geo, and, you know, Art of Fighting has two lead characters. You have ponytailed rich boy Robert Garcia, and you have gi-clad, you know, Japanese-American Ryo Sakazaki. And here's this guy who kind of looks like a fusion between the two. And they look at him, they sort of giggle a little, they giggle a little, and like, oh, well, that's funny. What if we actually take this and make this a guy a character? So that's where Dan was born. And his approach is definitely comedic. He's definitely got a lot of moves that are clearly based on stuff in Art of Fighting. Like, Art of Fighting uses a spirit meter. You can't just throw fireballs over and over and over. You have to sort of charge up your spirit. And if you don't have enough spirit and you throw a fireball, it just sort of pops. It doesn't go anywhere. You do the whole motion and it just doesn't go. And that's what Dan does. If he throws a fireball, I think it's called Gadoken in Japanese, it just sort of goes 1 centimeter in front of his body and that's it. The super version goes maybe like 4 centimeters. But like that's all he's got. He has his own dragon punch, but it has no invincibility whatsoever. So you can hit him out of it. It's no problem. He doesn't have the Takamaki, I don't know how to say it in Japanese, honestly, the spin kicking thing, but he does have a move where he launches forward and kicks 3 or 4 times, which is, again, kind of based on a move in Art of Fighting. And Funimizu, he insists it was not supposed to be some sort of dig. You know, as he puts it, everyone in Street Fighter is kind of like amazing martial artists. They're all, you know, they can literally, you know, swing their fists forward and shoot energy out of him. And his idea was, what if we added someone, quote, who wasn't like that, who was just a normal martial artist? It would highlight how incredible the other people are. In other words, we wanted to try adding a character with the concept of a second-rate martial artist.
Yeah.
Which I think is cute. I do. I honestly think it's cute.
Yeah, he's a great character. I really like Dan. In Street Fighter Alpha 2, I really like Sakura. They were really pretty far outside the kind of standard of Street Fighter characters and just fighting game characters in general. They were so distinct and came from a place that was kind of not self-effacing, but, you know, a little bit like, hey, these are kind of normal people who just kind of found their way into this martial arts tournament and they're doing their best. And I respect
what that. I would say is, like, with the Vampire Hunter, Vampire Savior, whatever series, Capcom started playing with more humor in the games. And so with Alpha, it kind of removes some of the direness of Street Fighter 2, where it was about saving the world and stuff. And there's still some world saving, but you've got Sodom, Dan, Sakura, you got the characters, Cody does a lot of hammy stuff. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of characters in here that are kind of goofy and messing around, and it gives it more of like a shonen manga vibe, where you've got some very serious characters like Ryu, who's never not going to be serious. And then you've got other characters that are goofing around and just here for the lulz. And, I think it's kind of nice. And it helped with the accessibility of the game to make it feel like, okay, this is, you know, maybe you weren't that great at Street Fighter 2, but here's your chance to come in and mess around a little bit with this.
And I also appreciate that, you know, as the game series went on and they added more and more characters, some of whom were established, those characters also got sort of a lighter side to them. Like, I remember when Blanca shows up in 3, I believe, one of his like win poses is he just like plugs a blender into himself and like charges up the blender to like make a smoothie for himself. Like, it's they're having a lot of fun with the characters who you already know. But now it's like, oh, what if, you know, what is this? You know, if a guy had electric powers, wouldn't he do that?
Yeah, probably.
Just one more thing, though, before I wrap up Dan here. I just want to point out that I do have a quote from Toyohisa Tanabe, who was a producer on the King of Fighters series. So he said that when he looked at Dan, he was like, I always felt Capcom was one step ahead of SNK. So when Dan came out, I was like, oh, look, they're noticing us. They made a character on us. And he claims that as Yuri Sakazaki, who is a character in The King of Fighters and Art of Fighting, he says as she learned more and more karate moves, he put moves on Yuri that were in Capcom games. So that was his response to Dan, is that he gave Yuri more moves from Capcom characters, which I think is also cute.
Then it all kind of comes full circle in SNK versus Capcom when those two do the same like intro pose together and it looks really goofy and silly. It's great.
Yeah, and I think there's got to be at least one game where someone looks at Yo and thinks he's Ryu or vice versa. Like, they definitely start, they joke around with that, because let's be honest, Ryu and Ryu are very similar names.
Yeah, it's true.
Other characters we want to shout out for Alpha 1. We got Adon and Birdie are both returning from Street Fighter 1. Adon's like a Muay Thai guy, but he's just like a really small, he's a smaller, faster guy. He does a lot of jumping around. He's got the Jaguar kick.
I love his little shrieky voice.
Yeah, very loud.
I really like that. And also, it was, to me, it filled a gap that Capcom had from the SNK lineup, because SNK always had Joe.
Yes.
And I felt like Adon was, as someone who had been playing a lot of King of Fighters and particularly liked Joe Higashi, when I came over to try to play Alpha, I was like, oh, this Adon character looks like something I could get into. And so that was, I think, the first character I really tried to play because it was familiar from KOF, which is kind of odd, but that's how it worked.
It makes sense. Also, we mentioned Birdie. Yeah, Birdie, aside from a slight race adjustment, he has a lot. He's like the big bruiser guy. He's definitely the Zangief style character. Except one thing I really like about Birdie is they gave him a lot of moves that give him sort of a surprising amount of agility. He's got a move that just lets him jump forward and grab you, which is perfect for, in a game where a lot of people can just throw fireballs over and over, he can just jump over them and grab you. So I thought that was a really cool sort of addition to him. In fact, he's a super move like that. He can jump across the entire screen, just grab you and pummel you, which I think is, a fun surprise.
And he's got a hole in his mohawk. You can't beat that. I love that.
Yeah, how does that even work?
I don't know. I was like, I guess they don't, they can throw fireballs. Maybe he's got some special power that allows his hair to be like that.
Speaking of amazing hair, let's talk about Charlie, aka Nash in Japan. I don't know why they couldn't agree on that, but Charlie now has a face. In Street Fighter 2, Guile's entire story revolves around his buddy Charlie being gone, and that's why he wants revenge against Bison. And, you never see Charlie because he's dead. Well, here he is, and he's got a gigantic swoosh. Like, how do you describe that hair? It's like a Nike swoosh, but it goes down over his face. Like, it goes up and it comes straight down.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's, if he and Guile, I mean, if their friendship has any rivalry to it, clearly they were hair rivals as well.
I mean, move-wise, they're basically identical. He's got the sonic booms, he's got the somersault kicks. He just looks a lot better. Definitely, Charlie's got the better look. He's got the glasses. He's wearing glasses at the start of the fight. Yeah. Naturally, in the ending, Charlie has to die. And I think he dies in the ending of Alpha 2 as well. But then in Alpha 3, I think they let him live. So,
yeah, they decided to bring him back because people like the character. So it's like, come on.
That's right.
Doesn't he become best buds with... that's Dan. Dan and Blanca become best buds.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Dan has a good relationship with Blanca, and I think he and Sakura also get along later because they're both self-taught students, so they have a kismet connection there.
I think Dan proclaims himself Sakura's teacher, she does not necessarily acknowledge it.
And who are we missing? Oh yes, one more character, Rose. Rose is the only truly unique character in that she has there's no direct previous Street Fighter character for Rose. However, she is this spitting image of Lisa from part 2 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I mean, she's got the gigantic scarf. She comes in, she's a fortune teller, so they've got some tarot card imagery. At the time, I didn't know that, but now that I know, it's, yeah.
Was she the tryout for getting the JoJo license? Was she like their, their spec script, right, basically the equivalent, like, hey, look what we did. Can we make your game now for you? Thank you.
I found her character amusing because, again, as a 14-year-old or whatever, I was like, so this is what Italian people look like. My introduction to Italians, Rose from Street Fighter Alpha. We also didn't talk about Guy yet.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I mentioned him briefly as coming for Final Fight. But yes, Guy is here, and he's got a lot of running moves. He can do a triangle jump. The FAQs describe him as good as poking. That's a technical term, but yeah.
I would say that in Alpha 1, I was like, why is he here? Because it felt like he didn't have a lot of moves. And what it felt like there was potential for him to do stuff with like chain combos and stuff, but it was so complicated as to not appear worth my while. And then later on, they made him a little more useful, and I actually quite liked him. And in a way, his limited moveset was like, oh, okay, maybe you can really learn this guy and his normals and stuff more. But again, as a 14-year-old, I was like, what's the point of him being in here? It's cool, but like, doesn't have a lot of stuff.
He's got tennis shoes.
I was always really confused by he's got one super move that just, he basically sort of slowly moves upwards, like punching and kicking. So it's like, it's purely anti-air. Like if you do it on the ground, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, so you only do it if someone's jumping at you and you know they're jumping at you.
Yep.
Rose has one too, but she just grabs you and throws you, which looks cool. And he just sort of like is doing punches and kicks as he moves upwards.
And hers has an angle to it. And possibly multiple angles, I forget. But his is definitely just like, I'm just going to go straight up. But then they give Ken one of those later with his double quarter circle back kick move that I don't remember the name of, where he just has like a swirling dragon go straight up. But that one's a little more understandable to look at because it's like, okay, I'm making a big pillar of fire.
Right.
But with Guy, it was just like flump, 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 just going straight up. It's like he's climbing a ladder. I wasn't sure about that one.
I do like that Ryu and Guy both, they're the Japan characters, quote unquote, and in their drawing, in their background stage, you've got like a, just a standard convenience store, but the name of the convenience store is Son Son, which I always thought was cute.
Very good. Yeah, it is cute.
So that is all the characters from Alpha 1. Let's talk for a second about the new stuff. Because Street Fighter, as we mentioned, this is sort of a restart for Street Fighter. So they threw in a bunch of stuff there that was not new to fighting games, but new to Street Fighter. So one of the things that I thought was definitely a big surprise for me at the time was when you play Street Fighter Alpha and you choose your character, you get to choose right away. You can choose manual or auto. And manual is like how you expect a fighting game to play. Auto, the game will automatically block a certain number of attacks for you, unless you were attacking at that time. If you're just standing around and someone tries to punch you, the game will block for you. So I guess that's, you know, it's a slight olive branch to sort of throw to people. If people aren't used to having to push the joystick to block, okay, well, we got you. We got you.
So that's like the opposite of Street Fighter 3's parry system, basically.
Yeah.
I'm curious how people felt about that, because for me, even as someone who wasn't very good at Street Fighter at the time, I found auto confusing. I didn't really get auto block until the Asuka 120% series, which I love very much. But I didn't feel like I had perfect information about the system, when it was going to block, when it wasn't going to block. And so I turned it off in order to save my confusion and at least know that if I didn't block something, it was my fault.
I never actually used it because I always came to the series, you know, straight out of Street Fighter and all those other games. So I felt like I didn't need it. So I never actually used it.
That, and also, like, I don't know. I find that I'm not standing stock still very often in these games. I'm always kind of moving around. Maybe that's because I use more mobile characters. But like, if I'm just kind of standing there and taking punches, I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, I mean, blocking is a valuable tool, no matter where you are. But if you don't know when for sure it's going to happen, then that's
I'm saying, like, I block just. To activate the auto block, you have to just kind of be standing there, I think.
Oh, right.
That was kind of my understanding.
You can't be attacking for sure.
Yeah.
So
that's what threw me.
Yeah.
Speaking of blocking, you can now block in the air. Darkstalkers had that, but Street Fighter Alpha adds that to the Street Fighter series. There's also the Alpha Counter, which I think is a very interesting mechanic. You can spend one level of your super meter and you just throw off a move and it will knock anyone out of whatever they're doing to you.
Yeah, that I always thought that was very interesting, but I never got proficient enough to where it felt like it was useful to me. Like I wasn't sure that I had made a good trade-off, because like is it gonna take so much life off of me, this attack that the opponent is doing, that it's worth me not being able to do a super on them? And that trade-off, I guess I'm a very aggro player, and so it was hard to spend meter on defense. It made me mad. I didn't like it.
I hear you. I didn't use it that often, but I did appreciate, you know, if I was stuck, especially if it was like maybe late game and maybe they were trying to chip me out, you know, just with block damage. It's like, okay, no, I'm getting out of this corner.
I also liked seeing the little I'm flipping in the air animation for everybody.
Yes, they had those little, yeah, that's cute. It's like a spin rings or something. It's,
Yeah, nifty. Made them all little rotate. They should have had at the end that everybody's on a rotisserie or something.
Speaking of Super Meter, the Super Meter system has been dramatically overhauled. So in Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, everyone has 1 meter. It's either full, Either it's full and you can use it, or it's not full and you can't do anything with it. Now in Alpha, you've got three levels, so the more you fill it up, the more you can do with it. And you can also choose whether you want to use one, two, or all the meter to deliver a giant move, or just do one move and then save some for later.
I loved that myself. I thought that was so cool. It was great, and you could like your opponent wouldn't necessarily know which one you were gonna do when it started out, and it felt like the right level of options for someone of my ability at that time, because I could really understand what it was doing for me and how to use it. I really liked it.
We have a good quote here from Murata. He said, the Super Combo gauge also saw some major changes. At first, you wouldn't be able to use Super Combo the way you could now. For example, certain moves had used specific gauges, one gun gauge, two gauge, blah, blah, blah. But during the development, they decided, they felt it was too hard to understand. So they submitted a new idea. It's like, okay, let's let players choose what they want to do. And as Okada said, it was exhausting because they had to redo the whole thing. Which, again, this game was made a very short time schedule. So it must have been difficult for them. But I think in the end, they got a much better product out of it. Because
worked out for me.
Yeah. The only move that I know for sure is the Akuma Shungokusatsu, the super, you know, Raging Demon, whatever move. That has to be level 3.
Yeah.
But everything else, you can choose what you want to do with it.
Also, it's no good making fun of people's word flubs, but I really am enjoying the idea of a super condo. I want to know.
You know, Ken and Ryu live next door to each other.
Yeah, they live next door to each other in the super condo. They share a backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I saw Spider-Man No Way Home last week, so let's say that's what I mean by super condo.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not good enough at fighting games to really get the most out of the super combo system. Like, you know, sometimes I make it work for me and I'm like, yay, but it kind of feels like, hey, tiny miracle. So, you know, I understand the system. I'm just not great at executing it, but I like the concept at least.
I think in Alpha, most of them, at least in the first Alpha, they were a little more simplified, the motions for them, which I appreciated. But then they got more complicated, like, well, actually, maybe Chun-Li's was like that from the start, but her, like, down diagonal to up diagonal, back and forth move yep. thing to get her, I don't know. I have a hard time with charge characters to begin with, but some of those motions were a little like, okay, maybe that's a bit much. On the other hand, Charlie's super was much easier for me to execute as a charge character than
the
others
had kicks?
Been. Yeah, the big friggin'
Sonic booms?
Sonic boom that stays okay. in place. The big disc.
I think in Alpha 1, it's just a series of Sonic booms.
That's right. It's just a bunch of little Sonic booms. And
yeah,
then
I think later games, it becomes like a big boom.
Later, he gets the big boom. Big bada boom.
Speaking of combos, that's also a big change for this game. Almost every character can just link light attacks, medium attacks, to heavy attacks. So you can sort of just choose which way you want to go with that. And it varies character to character, but most characters have some form of that sort of linkage. It's also much easier to cancel normal attacks into special moves or super moves. And this was deliberate. We have a quote from Kramer, Chris Kramer. From the American branch. He says, Alpha was going to be the new player-friendly one because arcade operators were saying, hey, the only people who play Street Fighter 2 are these hardcore guys, and they can put in tokens and stay on the machine for an hour, and new players don't want to put in money because it's so overwhelming. So that's why Alpha had air block and counters and combos and stuff that was a lot more friendly. Although to counter that, we do have a quote from Seth Killian, who used to be at Capcom. I'm not sure what he's doing these days, but
I believe he's at Epic.
Is it Riot? I think he's at Riot.
Oh, Riot?
Riot.
I don't know. Someplace.
But anyway, noted fighting game maven, Seth Killian, and he said, both air block and chain combo systems were done well in later games, but Alpha 1's versions felt underbaked and threw the baby out with the bathwater. So Killian was not a fan.
Yeah, I understand where they're both coming from, really, because for my money, Alpha's extra systems were like, it felt like here's a bunch of stuff that you can use. And it was friendlier for new players in that you didn't have to do all of it and it was still friendlier, and there was a lot of, like, if you learned one of those systems, you got a lot out of it. But there was also, there was so much that learning all of it required you to be hardcore and sort of, to actually fully utilize everything would have required the dedication that Street Fighter II required almost. But I think that's why they simplified it for future series, for entries in the series, I would say.
One other cute small addition I want to mention is the fact that characters can taunt now. You push the start button, you taunt. And for whatever reason, you're only allowed to taunt once. Chun-Li, actually, her taunt is actually an attack. She sort of does a quick little bow and says, "Gomenne," but if you are standing too close to her, her little like hand gesture will hit you.
Yeah.
And it does one micron of damage, but it can KO you. And I think she has a special, like, I think she has a special victory, like, badge if she KOs you with a taunt.
I love watching combo videos with Chun-Li from Alpha because people love to end with that taunt because it can do this tiniest amount of chip damage. Well, it's the equivalent of chip damage, basically.
Yeah.
And, so it's really fun. It's a fun brag to end your combo with that and have that be the killing blow. And also the whole thing with taunts goes into the, you know, the lighter tone and kind of the addition of goofiness to the Street Fighter series, because it just makes it like, it lightens it up a little bit. It makes it friendlier and funnier, and it feels more like it's for a wider audience.
And as a fun character note, Dan is allowed to taunt as much as he wants. He has infinite taunts.
And he can just roll all over the place.
That's true.
I think later games give him like advanced taunts, and eventually, I'm not sure which game starts it. I don't think it's Alpha 1, but he eventually gets a super taunt.
Yes.
Where you can spend meter and taunt.
Yep. Very good.
I think it's time to talk about drama.
Drama.
Yes.
It's here.
So, the animated film ends with a big 2-on-1 fight where you and Ken fight Bison at the same time. It's an incredibly well-done scene. It's really cool. This theme song kicks into the background. It's just this awesome, you know, awesome theatrical moment. And Funimizu says, "In the middle of development, I said it would be pretty fun if we could do something like this without even thinking about it. Then Okada said, 'Sounds good, let's do it.'" And Okada regretted that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes when you're crunching for months at a time and never sleeping, you say things without really thinking about it, and then you spend weeks regretting it.
But yes, it's a hidden mode in the game. I think it's even the arcade. It's probably harder to do in the arcade one because you got to put in coins. But in the home system, it's just like you put some codes in the menu. And it's a secret hidden mode called Dramatic Battle. And you and Ken together fight Bison. And you can't choose any other players, and that was intentional. We have, again, a quote from Funimizu. He says, "When the playable characters are you and Ken, you have two distinct clothing colors, white and red. This was one of the main conditions for the mode. Because the two characters are there at the same time, they also share a life bar, which is why this mode is so interesting to me, because it's not, you know, on paper that sounds like it's going to be overwhelming. But when the two characters share one life bar, that means if Bison gets in one good move and hits both of you, you're just gone, because he'll hit both of you for double damage."
Mm-hmm.
Especially if he does a Psycho Crusher, he can just wipe you both out. Mm-hmm. But if the two of you can get around Bison and just, like, jab him to death, it looks really funny. Anyway, this was directly based on the anime, so they actually, in the Japanese version only, they include an instrumental cover of the pop song which plays in the film, which Itoshi Sato, Setsuna Sato, which was a big hit. It's still a karaoke standard to this day. So there's an instrumental version of that in the arcade version. I think maybe the home versions too, but only in Japan. And they said in the interview that they had to spend a fortune on copyright fees. So that's why they didn't put in any other versions, because they didn't want to pay for it.
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't actually really worth it. the amount they spent on that. It's cool though that it's there. But man, the rights over there for music and stuff are so different from the rights for for games that, like, not to name any particular names, but for certain things where you might say want to get the arranged version of a song for your video game, even if you may own the rights to that video game, the rights for that music is owned by somebody else, and you have to relicense your own music that you made in order to put it back into the game for a re-release.
I feel like that's happening more and more here with people, you know, large corporations, holding corporations, buying up music catalogs and jacking prices way, way up for licensing. Like, even a few years ago, that wasn't apparently such a big thing, but now it's really becoming common. And the property management companies are really putting the screws on people who want to license music for media.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the case of Japan, the villain's name is Jazzrak. Mm, that is the licensing organization that handles all this stuff.
That sounds like some sort of Babylonian god or something.
Yeah, I have off-topic anecdotes about Jazzrak and how much of a pain they are, but at least in the case of this game, Jazzrak in part played spoiler, because they hid this mode in the game. It's not advertised, but apparently because they had a licensed product, on the arcade machine, they had to put a Jazzrak sticker. I've seen these stickers in Japan.
Yeah.
There's a special sticker there. So when the Jazzrak sticker was there, fans were like, what is this? What is this? And they started looking for it, and that's how they found this mode, because the Jazzrak sticker.
Yeah, I love dramatic mode. I think it's a great idea. I love it much more in subsequent editions of the game, where you can choose whoever, like in the Alpha 3 Saturn version. But even just with Ryu and Ken, it's fun. And it's just I love the idea of a co-op fighting game, and I'm always so surprised that there aren't more of those. Like, why isn't that more common? I mean, I know there's some tag battle ones where you can do that. There's, I think Guilty Gear Isuka.
I feel like that's in Smash Brothers, right? There's got to be, like,
Smash Brothers
team-up battles in Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I mean, that counts. But Smash Brothers is much more of, like, a... like the
careful
platform
what you
fighters.
Say, you're going to make some people angry.
No. I'm just going to say platform fighters are more like a go-anywhere kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And in these sort of single-screen... I mean... Obviously, platform fighters are also single screen, but they have, you know, depth. You can sort of go under the field. You can go way off into the sky. But in these sorts of limited frame games, I feel like only Guilty Gear Isuka and some doujin games like Queen of Heart 99 and stuff actually tried to have 2-on-2 real time. It's difficult to do, but not impossible. And I'm surprised there isn't more of it, because it's like... ridiculously fun.
It was always a mode I enjoyed in Mugen. Mugen had 2-on-2.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
And, of course, Fatal Fury had the sort of one time only, where when a second player joined in, the two of you got to team up against the CPU, but then you had to fight each other.
Right.
But either way, I definitely agree. I do really enjoy the 2-on-1 fighting style. I think it's a lot of fun, and I wish more games would experiment with it and develop it and try things with it.
Yeah.
So with the first alpha, was the dramatic battle, did that take place in the field, the moonlit field that was in the movie, or was that something that was introduced later?
That was introduced
later,
yeah.
That background came in 2, I think.
Okay.
Or 2 or 3, but...
No, it was in 2 for sure.
Definitely in 2.
Yeah, in Alpha 1, I believe the dramatic battle takes place on the Great Wall of China, but it's just one of the stages that they have. Again, they didn't have a lot to choose from.
Right.
So I think it was Great Wall. Let's talk briefly about the legacy of Street Fighter Alpha, because we are getting on towards the end of this episode. Alpha got 2 sequels on its own, which I think we will revisit in future episodes.
Yes, please.
1 year later was Alpha 2. That was 96 in most platforms. And then 98, there was Alpha 3. 2 and 3 both had little, like, arcade revisions, home revisions. There was Alpha 2 Gold. Alpha 3, I think, has, like, Dash and, like, Upper, like, this, the names get crazy. but each one added and expanded on the roster. You know, I sort of grouchingly complained about the number, you know, only five backgrounds, but yeah, once the series was a hit, they went out of their way to expand and put more stuff in there. And by the end, I think Alpha 3 ends up with like 40 characters, something outrageous. So
yeah, 39. I have to correct us. I think that the dramatic battle in the flowing grass was only in 3.
Okay.
I think in 2 it was in the waterfall zone. I'm pretty sure. That's all I can find looking it up right now. Just to make sure we don't look like dumbos again.
Yeah, just leave that on. Just heap it on me. Put it on my shoulders. It's my fault.
No, it's okay.
I'm the scapegoat this episode.
But yeah, the legacy. There's a bunch of cool stuff, and I feel like it could be a whole extra episode probably because there's like. Well, I can say that all of my main objectives, well, okay, 2 out of 3 of my main objectives when working on the Street Fighter collection were to get Alpha 2 Gold in there and Alpha 3 Max in there. I did not achieve either of those goals. I did manage to get Super Street Fighter 2 Tournament Battle in because that, for Switch only, that was like the linked tournament mode for different arcade, multiple arcade machines. You could link them up and it was a special edition that only worked if you had 8 arcade machines or however many it was. And we did manage to get that into the collection, which is really cool. But those Alpha games, we did not get them because we were just using, it was arcade only, so we couldn't get the home ports. But Alpha 2 Gold has like amazing music. Like the music, they just use different instruments really, and a better synth. But I love the music in Alpha 2 Gold, and I think it's the best. Maybe not the very, maybe tied with Street Fighter 3 for me in terms of my favorite Street Fighter music. I love it. And then Alpha 3 Max just adds all that dramatic battle stuff. That's the PSP version. It adds Ingrid from Capcom Fighting All-Stars. It's just got like so much nonsense in there, and it's on the PSP for some reason. I don't know. I love it. I think it's very good. That series just kept getting better. And the game that we're working on right now, Hyper Gunsport, has our like stage intros and or rather round intros and also countdowns and stuff are all influenced by Street Fighter Alpha 3 menus and their kind of stage intro graphics and stuff. It's the later games had a pretty big impact on my life and my life as a game developer, so I'm glad that Alpha exists, if only so that the other two could exist.
Yeah, Alpha 3 is up there with Ridge Racer Type 4 as just the most beautiful, stylish user interfaces and presentation on PS1, you know, 32-bit systems.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I love looking at it. And it's interesting, like, back in the day, I was thinking, it's too bad that Alpha 3 and Alpha 2 are on, you know, it's good that they're on the Saturn because they can get all these frames of animation that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get. But it's too bad that they can't do transparency. That's what I thought as a young person. And then later I realized that the CPS2 and CPS3 don't do transparency either. So it was actually like, it was accurate to what it was. They had dithered life bars and all that kind of stuff. There wasn't transparency. So it was actually more accurate than I thought it was.
Well, speaking of the arcades, these Alpha character models became sort of the new, because they were, I think, newer, and the fact that they fit more in line with the sort of the cartoon look, these are the characters that ended up starring in all the Marvel versus games, you know?
Yeah.
This is Street Fighter Alpha is 95 and X-Men versus Street Fighter is 96. So, and then from there it just builds and builds, and eventually you get Marvel Capcom 2, which is like all these Marvel characters, all these Capcom characters. And almost all the Capcom characters are from Alpha or from other games, but nothing from Street Fighter 2 originally. Only Alpha characters sort of have the look that faces off that well. So I also think that, you know, as the quote from Chris Kramer alluded, like, because this game was new and because it had a different look, I think it got more attention. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, especially if you look at the long gap there between Street Fighter 2 and Street Fighter 3, and, you know, Street Fighter 3 didn't do that well in arcades for a while. So I feel like Alpha and the Versus games sort of kept Street Fighter characters like cool and hip for a while there. At least that's my take on it.
Yeah, I also feel like they kind of, the Alpha series gameplay-wise and visually, was sort of what leaned toward having the Capcom versus SNK series. Like, playing the alpha games is what made playing Capcom versus SNK 2 so smooth. It was like such an easy transition to go from someone who played KOF 2000 and Street Fighter Alpha 3. I could just pick this up and be like, oh, everything is as I expect. You know? And I feel like just that smoothness of play and also the, like, the wackiness, it all led really nicely into Capcom versus SNK, CBS 2. And I agree with the Marvel games as well. Like, they obviously amped up the drama and the ridiculousness and just, like, combos coming out of everybody's orifices. But, it does feel like there, you had your serious Street Fighter branch and then you had your goofy play around other branch. And that other branch wound up going much wider than the serious Street Fighter branch did. As Street Fighter was kind of stagnating and they kept trying with three and they were just really dialing further and further into the extremely hardcore people that played Street Fighter 2. Then you had all this stuff just spinning out into the ether. And so I feel like the tip of the spear was really the Vampire Savior series, but then taking that in a Street Fighter direction with Alpha, then it wound up branching out into this whole extra direction. And we got a lot of really good fighting games because of that.
Absolutely. And I also want to mention the fact that, you know, as the series progressed, they got more and more characters, and almost every Alpha character would later appear in regular Street Fighter, either 4 or 5, except for Sodom. Sodom is MIA.
And they never, did they ever get Ingrid? I feel like they didn't.
Yes, she's in 5.
Ah, oh, man. Nice. Oops.
That's okay.
I haven't been keeping up with the, DLC.
Five added a lot of characters over the years, and that she showed up eventually. I don't know what season it was, but
yeah, more characters are just showing. I gotta admit, I did fall off of 5. I tried to play it, and it just didn't really work.
Nope. Yeah, for me, Alpha 3 was the last time that I really connected with Street Fighter. After that, I tried, and it just never quite clicked. So to me, like, Alpha 3, we'll talk about that, you know, sometime in the future. But that's kind of like the purest expression of what I want from Street Fighter. Just so much crammed in there. Just everything, but also in a very approachable, fun way.
Yeah, man, let's do an Alpha 4. Bring Street Fighter back to 2D. Do Street Fighter Alpha 4. I'm ready.
I'm into it.
They would probably wind up having to do it like illustrated 2D style. I doubt they could actually do a pixel art game in this day and age at Capcom, but if they could, I'd love it.
Yeah, they probably don't have the institutional knowledge for that anymore. I feel like you just don't see pixel art games coming from Capcom at this point. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it would probably wind up being outsourced to somebody, but maybe that would be okay.
You know, if we're dreaming out loud, how do we get a Guilty Gear style alpha game? You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because Guilty Gear these days, you know, it still looks like animation, but it's all 3D characters. Like, how do we get that?
I think you hire Arc System Works.
Exactly. I think you have to have Arc System Works do it.
Alas.
Yeah. Alas and alack.
Well, I think Alpha has reached its omega in this conversation. So let's wrap things up here. Let's start with our special guest, Brandon. Brandon, what should people know about you and if they want to find you or talk to you about other things?
Yes, I have plugs.
Yes.
First of all, if you like hearing me talk about video games and make dumb jokes, you can check out my podcast, Insert Credit, at insertcredit.com. And I do that along with Tim Rogers of Action Button and Frank Cifaldi of the Video Game History Foundation. And it's pretty fun, so give that a look. The other thing is, I would love for people to wishlist my game Hyper Gunsport on Steam. It's a 2v2 cyberpunk volleyball with guns video game about shooting a ball into a goal. And it's extremely visually influenced by games like Street Fighter Alpha 3, King of Fighters 2001, and other kinds of nonsense. And I can say that from experience working on that game that making backgrounds takes a really extremely long time. So I understand why they only had 5 backgrounds in Alpha 1. It's just like backgrounds, if you want to have moving stuff and detail and parallax and nice little stuff going on, it takes some time to make a good one in pixel art. And that's what this game is. So yeah, those are my things. Please wishlist Hypergunsport if you're feeling generous. It's really the only way that Steam can know, like, I don't know if people know this, but like the algorithms that push you to the top of Steam will not do so unless you're already popular. And the only way to already be popular is to have wishlists. And that's why people beg for them all the time, because there's literally no other way to get up there unless you have like a big marketing budget or you get some kind of flash in the pan, unpredictable accident of fate that gets you to become popular. But otherwise, it's like, if you don't have wish lists, you're dead in the water. So that's
a great
why
system.
We beg for them. Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, my wish list on Steam is approaching triple digits because that's how I approach it. Like, oh, does this game look interesting at all? I'm going to wish list it.
Very nice.
Because that's, you know, doesn't cost me anything. Brandon, do you use Twitter?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm on Twitter as Necrosofty. That's my company name, Necrosoft, with a Y at the end of it. So give a look at that. And the game company's Twitter is Necrosoft Games. And yeah, I think that's all we use, more or less. So hit us up there. We also have a Discord, which is whatever, discord.gg/Necrosoft Games, something like that. We don't use it that much because I'm just not a big Discordy guy. I actually use the insert credit forums. We made old school forums.
Forums are so good. They were great.
Forums are great. Like,
I love them.
It's got slow communication. You can look at it whenever you want. You can catch up on it however you want.
Right?
You don't feel as much pressure.
It's not as ephemeral.
Also, yeah, it's less ephemeral. You can see the whole thread of the conversation. And if you want to have a petty argument about, you know, whether it's better to play Nier Automata or Nier Replicant first, you can have that kind of an argument on a forum. Like, you don't have to worry about the real world all the time. You can just have a dumb forum argument again. I mean, we worry about the real world on there too. It's a very left-leaning forum, but it's nice to be able to have like a live journal style throwdown with somebody about, you know, whether Ryu or Ken is cooler again.
Another cool thing about forums is that you can post an interesting fact or, you know, valuable piece of information in 2006. And then in 2022, someone can come along and say, oh, this information is not available anywhere else. I'm glad that I found it in this time capsule from 16 years ago. You can't do that
totally
on Discord.
And what's wild about that is that it still happens today. Like, we had someone join the forums recently because they were like, I was looking for this information and it was nowhere else on the internet. And the forum is only a year and a half old at this point. So, like, that's the Insert Credit forums, by the way. Forums.insertcredit.com. Enjoy.
So Retronauts is not just about retro video games. It's also about retro ways of communication.
That's right.
Oh, you said the word Retronauts, Jeremy. What would you like to promote?
Well, this is your episode, so I'm going to let you promote Retronauts, but
okay.
I am retro, and you can promote me. I am Jeremy Parrish. You can find me on Twitter as GameSpite and talking about old video games on YouTube and often writing about old video games at Limited Run Games in their packaging or newsletters or whatever.
Yeah, I just got that big book. I haven't cracked it open yet, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the first of many to come. I got to get cracking on the second one.
I look forward to being in one because we had a limited run game. So.
Ah, very exciting. I will interview you about that someday, or maybe Jared will. I don't know. One of us will.
We'll find out.
And then, of course, I'm on the podcast Retronauts, which you can learn more about courtesy of Diamond.
I've heard of that.
Yes, this is Retronauts, and we are fan-supported. Thank you so much for your support over the years. We have one free episode every week, but if you support us for just $3 a month, you get those episodes a week in advance. And if you go one step further and do $5 a month, my goodness, not only do you get the early episodes, you get 2 bonus episodes every month, you get weekly columns and recordings from me every week. In fact, I did one about Street Fighter Alpha when it turned 25 back in June of 2020. You also get access, we just made fun of it, but we have a Discord. So you can access our Discord if you join at the $5 level. So you can do all this if you go to patreon.com/retronauts. As for me as an individual, I am Fight Club on most platforms, F-E-I-T, my last name, C-L-U-B, the noun or verb if you like. And you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Twitch. You can also find me on Patreon and Ko-fi as my own thing if you'd like to do that. But I believe that about wraps us up. So, Brandon, what is the name of your dog?
My dog's name is Pocket. He did you hear him bark?
I did. He joined our last episode too, so I figured at this point we should just shout out Pocket.
Oh yeah, yeah, Pocket. He's a good guy. He's doing his best. But if somebody's getting up to some nonsense outside, like for example, walking by. He doesn't like it. He's got to let you know.
Dogs are very defensive about walkers.
Yeah. Sometimes he'll hear like someone jangling their keys and he'll be like, that's a dog. I need to go get him and fight him and beat him up. But he's 17 pounds. He's not beating anybody up.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. And I think that's it. Let's say goodbye, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Adieu.